Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we come to you from the Farm Progress Show held last week in Regina. We'll talk to the 2018 Saskatchewan Outstanding Young Farmer Award winners about their operation. We'll hear about the real cost of potholes on farmland and why they should be drained. Robin Booker of the Western Producer asks, what new legislation will mean for Saskatchewan hemp growers? Plus, we'll look at how you can bring an innovative mindset to your marketing. That's all on Between the Rows, with this week's host, Lisa Gunther.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Lisa Gunther. This week's show is a special edition recorded at Canada's Farm Progress Show in Regina. And if you've been to Farm Progress, you know the weather is usually hot. And this year was no exception. Each year, Saskatchewan's Outstanding Young Farmers are announced at Farm Progress. The Outstanding Young Farmer program recognizes a farming couple between 18 and 39 who embody excellence in their professions. Regional winners go on to represent at the national event. Speaking with me now are the 2018 Outstanding Young Farmers for Saskatchewan, Jordan and Jennifer Lindgren of Norquay, Saskatchewan. Hello and congratulations.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks very much.
So just to start off with, tell us a little bit about your farm.
We're a mixed grain farm, oil seeds and cereals. It's a century family farm. I'm fourth generation on the farm. And we work closely with our kids and raise different types of crops on the farm.
Great. And one thing I understand is that you do quite a few trials on your farm. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, we partner with Prairie Soil Services and we do a Field of Dreams is what it's called. And it's basically trying to see how far we can push production using different applications of products, different technologies, different rates of different things, seed rates, trials. And yeah, so there's a lot of trials.
And one of the things I think that stood out about your farm is you have a very intentional way of sharing that information with other farmers.
That's correct. We do a tour in the end of July, trying to showcase all these different things that we're trying and then pass that information on to our neighbors and other farmers.
So I understand you also have a food farm program. Jennifer, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have been wanting for a couple of years to be able to share our passion for agriculture and our knowledge for agriculture with the next generation, watching our kids on the farm and how excited they are to learn. We said, why wouldn't we want to share that with other kids? So this year we were able to partner up with the Ministry of Agriculture as well as Ag in the Classroom. And we were able to put on a food farm. So focusing on a burger and chip farm, I guess, is what we did, and be able to teach the kids about farm safety, PTO safety. We threw a straw man through the PTO to show the kids the impact that would have so that they can stay away from that, to lawnmower safety, to where they're, how to plant a crop, how to plant the seed, what it looks like, what the seed needs to grow, what it needs to do to flourish, and all that kind of stuff. So the kids responded really well, so it was really great.
So tell me about what it's like to win Saskatchewan's Outstanding Young Farmer Award.
Well, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, very, very prestigious.
Being nominated was overwhelming. We got asked if it was okay if we could be nominated. And so we accepted. And the process is very intense. I call it marriage counseling for farmers, actually. You have to write a 12-page essay and answer lots of questions and really talk about your goals, what you have accomplished, and
makes you go through your whole operation and how you do things and where you've been, where you are, where you're going, you know, the direction you're headed, your goals,
and
things like that.
Coming here to the program has been
overwhelming. The Outstanding Young Farmers program is just amazing. It's been an amazing experience, and the people that we've met and you know the relationships that we're going to gain and some knowledge, and it's just unreal.
Yeah, incredible.
And I understand you got to have breakfast with the Lieutenant Governor this week.
Yeah, that was a big honor. Apparently, he only does two or three of these a year, so he chooses Outstanding Young Farmers as one of them. So it was a pretty prestigious morning to be able to sit at a dining table with him. So
yeah, pretty fantastic.
I think that really speaks to the importance of agriculture in this province.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think they really want to recognize and, you know, focus on the farmers and the young farmers and promoting that in Saskatchewan.
Anything else you want to add about your experience this week?
You know, like we said, that it's such a well-run the Outstanding Young Farmers is such a well-run program.
It's like just, a family.
It, you know, you get to see the previous alumni and winners, and they get to discuss, you know, where they've headed after they've won and the relationships they've gained.
You have people from 20 years ago still coming back and supporting, and you feel you're in a room amongst all these wonderful people who have, you know, experienced so many things in the last 20, 30, 10 years, and the knowledge you can gain from each one of them is really exceptional.
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time. I know you've had quite a busy week, and congratulations again, and good luck when you go to the national event.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm Lisa Gunther. Drainage has become an ugly and controversial word in agriculture, with an estimated 150,000 unauthorized works in Saskatchewan alone. The Saskatchewan Farm Stewardship Association, formed in 2010, prefers the term water management and has opposed provincial legislation enacted to control water movement. President Miles Thorpe spoke at Canada's Farm Progress Show on June 20th about the cost of potholes on farmland and why they should be drained. He told the Western Producers, Karen Briere, that members of his group simply want rules farmers can work with.
No one wants to let water go fast and let flooding happen. They want it to go in a controlled fashion. But the thing is, in times when there is excess water, you can't hold it indefinitely either. It does need to move downstream in an orderly fashion.
You showed a photograph of tile drainage being installed, but you said you couldn't just go home and do that. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you can't?
Or as far as permitting? There is a permit process in place, and all new drainage needs to be regulated. So in order to get any surface drains or tile drainage or anything done, the process set aside is you're supposed to contact Water Security Agency and get the necessary approvals in place. So then they'll give you recommendations on what will affect or won't affect downstream landowners as far as water quality and flooding and things like that. So it's a process that you have to get approval for in order to get it done. I'm not advocating to go out and do it. You do need to go through the proper process.
What is the experience of SASC-FSA members in terms of getting permits through the new process?
It's a new process, so it's we have several members, or a lot of members that are engaged, and some are through the process, and some are starting. And with any new process, there's frustrations and hiccups. It's a lengthy process. They're still trying to figure out what some of the policy items are and what the rules and regulations are. So it's a work in progress. So there is a few approvals, and a lot more in the works.
Because the organization was against Bill 44, as I recall.
Right. Moving back to Bill 44, we had some strong recommendations against things we didn't like in there. And the biggest thing was it wasn't an empowering policy. It was a heavy-handed policy, we felt. And we wanted something that worked for farmers, that would enable farmers to do the right thing so they could manage these things and have good land and water quality down the road.
Just one question here today from somebody concerned about wetlands. Do you get that a lot?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, a lot of people are concerned about conserving wetlands. And the misconception is that our group and other groups like us want to get rid of everything. And that's not the case. As I demonstrated in the presentation, there's lots of small areas that really cost us a lot of money, and they have no positive impact on holding back water and flooding. So the big thing is, you know, we say our membership holds over 20% or around 20% of the land in habitat acres, and a lot of them are happy with leaving that. They don't, you know, it's not economical, or they like the habitat as well. They don't want to drain them all.
Thorpe told reporters some potholes have little value for conservation, yet they might cost farmers a lot of money in wet years.
Farmers are driven by economics. If we don't pay the bills, you're out of business. And the big thing around these small areas and depressions and water is when you're too wet and crops die, you lose money because you put the money into the economics, into the inputs, into the fertilizer, and you don't get anything back. My example showed if you planted a 0.37 acre pothole and it drowns out, you could lose up to $800 in revenue off from that 1.37 acres if it floods out the surrounding area, because it affects not just the area where the water is, but up to 100 feet around it.
That was Miles Thorpe of the Saskatchewan Farm Stewardship Association speaking to reporters. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm Lisa Gunther. What does Bill C-45 mean for hemp growers and farmers interested in growing cannabis? Natasha Perkins, Business Development Director at Prairie Can Growth Corporation, spoke at Farm Progress about the hemp and cannabis markets. The Western producer's Robin Booker caught up with Natasha to find out more.
So for Saskatchewan hemp growers, what has changed for them?
Okay, so we have to completely look at the crop differently because now we want to grow female plants only. We want to make sure they're not too close to male plants so that they don't get pollinated, because what we're trying to do is harvest the entire plant at the right time so that we have a high concentration of important cannabinoids like CBD. And so we have to somewhat protect those flowers because that's what we're going to be putting through a processing line to extract. So all of the compounds are found on the exterior of the flower in things called trichomes, which are like little factories for cannabinoids. And so farmers are going to have to work with us, a buyer, to figure out different strategies for harvesting.
So currently for hemp producers, they'll combine the seed with the header up in the air, and then they'll come back later for the hemp.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Or?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so how will harvest be different?
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that today. It's something we're looking at very closely, and it depends on the genetics that we end up using. So genetics is the primary issue with Canada, is that feminized seeds don't exist today in Canada. At scale that we would need it, like 20 pounds per acre.
So the big change for hemp producers is that they can utilize a whole plant now. How about for cannabis production? Is that going to be, is there a potential there for Saskatchewan farmers there also?
You know, that is, I think, a personal endeavor that people have to weigh the pros and cons. It's an expensive endeavor to do a large-scale cultivation center. I think I mentioned in my presentation it can cost upwards of $12 million capex to start.
So it has to be in a center. It can't be open-air production?
Correct. So cannabis is cultivated indoors, and that has to do with because of the THC presence in cannabis, which is psychoactive. So CBD is non-psychoactive, so that's why we're okay with growing it outdoors.
What do you have to do before next spring, before seeding next spring, and growers want to maybe tap into some new markets?
You need to find a partner who's going to help you navigate the waters. We like to think that Prairie Can is going to be that good partner because of our network from coast to coast in the U.S. We have to learn as much as possible from jurisdictions that are already harvesting for flower outdoor. So like Kentucky and Colorado are really notable jurisdictions.
What else should farmers know about Bill C-45 and how this may, and the opportunities it presents?
Sure. I think maybe you can look at it as an opportunity because it still would generate about $2 million in revenue annually, and that would be the micro cultivation license. So if you're a good grower and you're comfortable with growing indoors, greenhouse, or under HPS or LED lights, you can actually turn a decent profit off of that small cultivation center, which has to be under 2,000 square feet, and you can only produce up to 600 kilograms of cannabis annually. And like any producer knows, you have to have a buyer. So you have to understand how to get into the retail stores in the right way, and or someone like us who's doing more of an ingredient play. So we're going to look to work with large-scale food manufacturers, pharmaceutical manufacturers, cosmetic manufacturers to use CBD especially in their products.
That was Robin Booker of the Western Producers speaking to Prairie Can Growth Corporation's Natasha Perkins. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm Lisa Gunther. There's a heavy emphasis on innovation at Farm Progress, but innovation doesn't end with machinery. David Derwin of PI Financial presented on how farmers can bring that same innovative mindset to their marketing. I caught up with him during the show to talk marketing strategies.
Well, what I've always found is there's a lot of tools out there that come from the world of options and futures and strategies that use those tools to really help complement what they're already doing on the cash side with deferred delivery contracts and basis contracts. But options and futures-based strategies are new still to a lot of people, or some may have started using them, but not in their full and potentially their best capacity.
And what do you think the barriers are to farmers actually using these hedging tools?
I think it's like anything. You know, we're all human, and if it's new, We have to get comfortable and confident in them, learn how to use it. So that's certainly the biggest barrier for any of us to learn how to use a new tool. But specifically, I think it's just a matter of there might not be enough educational material, and you know, be it presentations or access to resources that are available and easy to tap into.
And where can farmers go for more information on using these kinds of tools?
Commodity exchanges, the Chicago Board of Trade, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Group in the States, which is the largest commodity futures exchange, does have a lot of really good online resources. There are often commodity marketing groups, or let's put it this way, commodity groups, you know, be it canola growers or wheat growers, that do have events that do focus on marketing. And then, of course, they can reach out to someone like me who provides a lot of that information up front, because I understand that the first step in the process is to learn a little bit more about it. But there is material and information out there. It just takes a little bit of wanting to dig into it a little bit and learn a little bit more about it.
And once farmers have some knowledge, how do you suggest they actually start implementing these strategies on their farm with their farm marketing plans?
Well, steps, slower steps, baby steps first, but there are some fairly straightforward tools you can use, like buying a put on canola, right? That's a nice, easy one. You may have already priced a certain amount into delivery contracts, be it a third, be it half, whatever it might be. This allows you to take it to that next step and maybe protect another quarter of your expected production without having to worry about committing it into delivery. So that's a nice, very easy, straightforward strategy that you can do. And then you sort of take it from there. And the markets are always changing, so the best strategy will change as market conditions change.
And how much of a difference can it make on a farm to kind of protect that downside risk?
Well, you know, with hedging, like all types of protection type strategies, it depends. Like, here's an example very recently with soybeans having dropped about, a good dollar and a half as a result of some of these trade-related issues. There are hedge positions that we have on now that have captured anywhere from about 75 cents to almost a dollar worth of protection. So if the markets have a big drop, it's going to help offset a good portion of that.
Great. Anything else you want to add, Dave?
Going forward, always be on the lookout for opportunities to learn more about marketing. And it's not just about the marketing side, it's how it fits into your cash flow management, the whole financial situation on the farm. They're all tied together, and these marketing tools, options, and futures can certainly help towards that bigger picture.
That was David Derwin of PI Financial. That's all we have today on Between the Rows, but we'll be back again next week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Lisa Gunther.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.